You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24 with me, Daniel Bache, host of The Entrepreneurs. On today's episode, my guest is Chris Hall, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Long Meadow Ranch, a family-owned California wine company and integrated agricultural business. With four wineries and a ranch, along with a restaurant cafe and a farmer's market, the business as a whole revolves around the idea of sustainable and responsible farming. The company's journey began when Chris's parents, Ted and Lottie Hall, purchased Long Meadow Ranch back in 1989. The property had been home to vineyards, orchards, and a dairy farm a century earlier, but had fallen dormant during Prohibition. Today, as the company deals with the effects of climate change and widespread wildfires we've all seen in the headlines, Long Meadow Ranch has become a leader in environmentally friendly and sustainable business practices, what they call full-circle farming. Here's Chris with the story of Long Meadow Ranch.
We came to Napa Valley in 1989 to what is known as Long Meadow Ranch. It had had that name since the 1800s. But the reason why we came to Long Meadow Ranch was because we were looking for a place to plant Cabernet Sauvignon vineyards in the mountains. Not necessarily important to be in Napa, but in the Mayacamas Mountains, which is the range that splits between Napa Valley and Sonoma Valleys. My dad started making wine in his garage in 1971, kind of as an amateur, with grapes that he got from the Santa Cruz Mountains originally. And I learned a lot about wine through that process, and eventually we wanted to find the right place to grow our own grapes. So when I was 9 years old, that's when we came to Long Meadow Ranch in Napa Valley. It had a lot of history, but had been neglected. So originally in 1872, it was planted to grapes and olives and farmed as a ranch. It was basically farmed until Prohibition in the 1920s, and then sold to a family from San Francisco who didn't farm the grapes because you couldn't sell your grapes anymore. It was Prohibition. So most of Napa Valley actually prior to Prohibition had about 700 wineries, and after Prohibition there was less than 100. So a lot of the farms and the ranches all kind of reverted to cattle or other crops and things. So the forest actually grew back over all of the vineyard sites that were planted at that time. So when we came to Napa Valley, we replanted all those pre-Prohibition vineyard sites on the ranch, but with the vision of just making one wine. And today we're making quite a few beyond that. But when I was 9 and 10 years old, we would grow, like, you know, a vegetable garden kind of behind the house or down on the ranch. And my mom had this idea of, I guess it was some entrepreneurial spirit, but that, you know, maybe I should take these vegetables to the farmer's market and sell them, kind of like a kid's lemonade stand operation or something like that. So I started taking backyard grown fruits and vegetables to the markets when I was about 10 years old, and we're still doing that today, but on a much larger scale. So when I was also about that age, I raised cattle and horses and chickens and all of these other livestock that we also eventually began selling the meats as well at the market to our local customers. So the evolution to today has been a long one, but it's pretty interesting. So today we grow grapes and we make wine. We grow grass for grass-fed beef and lamb. We grow organic fruits and vegetables. We raise chickens for eggs, bees for honey, olives for olive oil. So it's quite a dynamic operation of many different facets. And we brought that all together in 2010. I opened a restaurant in St. Helena in Napa Valley called Farmstead at Long Meadow Ranch, where we take all of those ingredients that we grow on the farm for the menu at the restaurant, and that kind of an experience.
In the way you describe it, it sounds very idyllic in the California sense. and California in the farm-to-table way does influence a lot of what the rest of the Western world, and especially America, is doing in that eating healthily and eating, you know, produce from where you come from.
Yeah, know where your food comes from.
And you guys starting out, or your parents, when they came to plant Cabernet Sauvignon and revitalize this vineyard that you took over, you've always had the sort of the vision of it being a responsible place. Can you talk to us a little bit about your motto and what that means?
Yeah, well, our motto is excellence through responsible farming, but we also talk about full circle farming, which is kind of our concept of organics, but taken a little bit further, and something that we're able to do because of all these different facets of what we're farming. So organic farming is the foundation of that. We farm all of our vineyards and everything that I was just describing organically, but we started doing that before there were certifications, before there were rules in place about exactly how to do it. So it was something we've always done. And the, you know, typical practice of organics is okay, like no commercial fertilizers, no herbicides and pesticides and those kind of activities. But because we're raising, for example, cattle and horses and chickens, we can take the manures from the livestock and combine it with the solid wastes that we get from the winemaking process or from making olive oil. So we're able to produce all of our own kind of custom fertilizers that we produce a few hundred tons of every year that we can put back on the vineyards or the orchards. I guess another example would be the top tomatoes, the beautiful heirloom tomatoes that we serve at the restaurant, heirloom tomato salad. The second quality ones might go to the gazpacho, right? The ones that aren't as pretty for your plate. But the third quality ones we'll feed back to the chickens. Well, we don't have to buy as much chicken food because they're eating the leftovers. And then, of course, those produce these wonderful organic eggs that can then come back to the restaurant. So there's all these little circles that are kind of involved with it that make it a different type of an element that we call full circle farming.
Is that what you mean by sort of the organic, sustainable, and integrated farming? Is that what that means?
Yeah, that's kind of the integration of those different facets of what we're doing. But beyond just the organic component of it, for example, we were one of the first adopters of solar power in the wine industry in California. So all of our facilities have different amounts of solar installations that provide the majority of the power that we use across the property. We collect all of the oil and the other things that come out of the restaurant, and we produce our own biofuels for our tractors and our other equipment. So there's a lot of different ways that this system can combine into one to help the life of its all.
California is known for its red wines, of course, and white wines, but in the New World sense, it is sort of a leading place. And it's an incredible world in Napa and Sonoma, and some of the values of the properties. Your business runs across three or four properties now, I think. What's it been like to sort of take this over and lead that operation that is a family-run business?
Well, it's been very rewarding, and my father still works alongside of me in a lot of the things that we do strategically in particular. But the evolution of the original ranch that I was describing a few moments ago down to additional vineyards that we've acquired that are in the Rutherford Appellation down on the valley floor to Anderson Valley, which is in Mendocino, where we also have Chardonnay and Pinot Noir vineyards that we're growing, and more recently to another historic wine property that has become part of our family called Stony Hill Vineyard, which is in the Spring Mountain Appellation. So those are the four locations, and they all provide very distinctively different kind of terroirs and, you know, styles of the wines that we want to represent from each one of them. And so expanding our portfolio, but also keeping our same philosophies of farming, wine style, and all of these elements as we continue to expand has been a really rewarding process.
In the way you describe the different properties and the different grapes and the different terroirs, that is great for having a wide open portfolio of different wines and produce and products that you can offer. In this world, though, today, especially in wine, we hear a lot about how climate change is affecting things, and a lot of winemakers, mostly in Europe, but perhaps in California as well, where there is a lot of unpredictable weather, are having to think about different ways to farm and different grapes to grow. But it sounds like you might be okay there. You've got some properties in different places, so you can sort of spread
that
out.
Well, yeah, we're diversified in your example of the geography, of course, as well. And I think, in particular, the mountain locations that we're growing in are inherently cooler. That's one of the reasons that we were attracted to them, because of the styles of wine that you can produce from cooler sites. So I guess that might be one avenue. But there is a lot of talk about, can Cabernet still be the top grape, or should you plant something else? But we plant vineyards, really, most people who plant a vineyard are really planting it for the next generation, because vineyards live 20 to 50 years. So making decisions about what you're going to do next isn't something that you make a light decision about. So there's new data that is available about trying to predict the temperature that will be in your particular location 10 or 20 or 30 years from now. And, you know, I'm not entirely convinced that we should be all changing our strategies today, but I do believe that there's a lot of tools that we have today that can help us with mitigating climate change in terms of the increases of temperature and how that helps with the wine styles that we produce. And so as a farmer and in the vineyard, we manage the canopy, which is the leaves that are on the vines, for example. They provide shade to the grape fruiting zone, for example. So the amount of leafing that you can do to prevent the amount of sun exposure that gets onto the grapes is another tool that you can have that allows you to, you know, be nimble as it relates to one season or the next, or overall temperatures and increasing, right?
The other thing you have to deal with in California, is, and we all see in the news, is the forest fires that have been the last few years. It seems like it's nonstop. How has that affected your properties?
Well, it was very scary. In 2017, we actually had the fire on our property, and it's a large ranch. It's about 650 acres, but the majority of it's actually wildland. So about half of the ranch actually burned, and it was a slow kind of creeping fire that came towards us over the course of a week. So I'd go up onto the top of the ranch, and I could see up to the top of the hill and see the fire kind of coming, and then go up the next day, and it made it a little bit closer and then a little closer and so on. So I actually am also a volunteer firefighter on the local Rutherford Fire Department, so I guess I had a little bit more insight and experience to what to expect. But for a lot of our neighbors and others in our community that lost actual homes or businesses, we were very lucky. So there have been some fires more recently again, but those haven't been that close to us, but have been enough to be concerning. And, you know, the change in the climate, I strongly believe, has something to do with it. It's high winds that are unusual. It's longer, drier summers that create fuel load that allows these things to occur. So it's something that we have to be really cautious about.
Give us a sense of what you're up to these days. I know you've mentioned the other property you've just taken over, a historical vineyard. But, you know, thinking about the size and scale of this and how you continue to grow the brand and grow the company, what might be next for you guys?
Oh, well, we always seem to have additional projects in our pockets. So I've got a new winery that we're actually been planning for some time that's in Rutherford. At the moment, our wineries that we have in the mountains are quite small and not sufficient scale to produce all of the wine that we farm. So we're developing a new winery in Rutherford, which I think is really going to be one of the industry standards for sustainability in our wine production. So maybe to just keep it at a higher level, but we're cleaning our tanks with water that we're able to recycle several times. So a typical winery that makes 1 gallon of wine uses up to 10 gallons of water. And through this process that we're implementing, we believe we're going to only be able to use 1 gallon of water to make 1 gallon of wine, which is a 10 times decrease. So as a result of this, we're going to actually be collecting rainwater to do all of the processes that we do in wine production, and therefore we're not going to have to use any groundwater. So a groundwater neutral winery is a really bold idea, and that's one element of it. We're using solar power and storage, batteries, and solar collection to generate ice, which it replaces a traditional cooling process when you're making wine. So that also dramatically reduces the amount of energy that we need. So we're actually going to be off the grid, which is also an interesting idea for a new winery. And all of the effluent that comes off of this process is actually much lower, right? Because you're using only 1 gallon instead of 10 gallons of water. We're able to use that to irrigate back on the vineyards. So there's also no effluent and no hazardous materials because we're not using glycol for cooling. So you combine those four things. Those are all new, actually, to the wine industry. But some of them have been used in the beer business or in other farming activities. But we're going to bring these together to create a new kind of sustainable standard, I believe, for wine production.
In the sense of your business, where it's all-encompassing, you're making olive oil, as you already described, growing fruit, growing vegetables. You've got a restaurant, a farmer's market, all these properties for making wine. Is that normal in California?
No, that's not normal. That's not normal many places. I mean, the concept of an integrated wine estate in Europe or other places is a little bit more common. But in California, at least in Napa Valley, there's a lot of protections that have been put in place, rightfully so, for maintaining agricultural land in perpetuity. So we have something called the Ag Preserve in Napa County, which is one of the reasons why I believe that it's been able to continue to be so beautiful and primarily an agricultural community, for example. So most wineries who are out in the vineyards, for example, you're not allowed to get permissions to build a hotel right there or to build a restaurant right there. So you have to go into the town to do that. And that's what we've done, is chosen to open a restaurant operation in St. Helena in the downtown area so that we're able to do all of the different things that we would like to, but with respect to the place that we live.
Thank you to Chris Hall from Long Meadow Ranch for coming in to share the story of the family business. And there are plenty of opportunities to visit their properties if you're in Northern California. Find them at longmeadowranch.com. The show is mixed and edited by Nora Hull. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.